Aren't you glad you're a Christian? All right, let's go ahead and we'll say last week's memory verse together. You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. John 18:37. Well, if you've got a Bible handy, either paper or digital, if you'd be turning over to John chapter 19. Have you ever had a moral dilemma or a moral struggle? Maybe it was between what you knew was the right thing to do and what you really wanted to do, or what someone else wanted you to do. Maybe you knew that doing what was right was going to cause you a great deal of grief. Or maybe you just couldn't figure out what the right thing to do was. So today in our text, we're going to encounter a tremendous moral struggle. And the man experiencing this struggle was the governor of Judea and Samaria, Pontius Pilatus. And of course, we normally refer to him as Pontius Pilate. Well, last week we began looking at Jesus before Pilate in the end of chapter 18. Very, very early in the morning, the chief priests, the Jewish leaders, they brought Jesus before him in order to have the death penalty pronounced upon Jesus. Well, Pilate, he was really an unwilling participant in this story. Matthew and Mark, they tell us that he realized it was because of envy that the chief priests had delivered Jesus up. And among other things, we saw that he tried a way to release Jesus by using this custom of releasing a prisoner during Passover. And we learn from the other Gospels that Pilate actually gave them this choice between these two men, Barabbas and Jesus. And John said that Barabbas was a robber, one who steals by force and violence. And we learn from the other Gospels that he was a notorious prisoner who was an insurrectionist and a murderer as well. And so like I asked last week, which one of these guys do you want back out there on the streets? Someone who heals people and tells them to love their neighbors, or someone who robs people and stirs up insurrection? But his plan, it backfired. It didn't work, and now he's going to have to deal with Barabbas back out there in the public again. So he thought the multitude would surely side with Jesus, but Mark 15:11, it says, the chief priests stirred up the multitude to ask him to release Barabbas for them instead. Many of the people feared the Sanhedrin, and people, they're often so fickle. You know, when Jesus rode into town, they were crying out, Hosanna to the Son of David. Now, again, it's very easy to get caught up in the hype of the moment, whatever it is. We need to be careful of that. Well, in Acts chapter 3, Peter said to his fellow Jews, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, has glorified his servant Jesus, the one whom you delivered up and disowned in the presence of Pilate when he had decided to release him. But you disowned the holy and righteous one and asked for a murderer to be granted to you, but put to death the Prince of Life. They chose a murderer, and like Barabbas, they were about to become murderers themselves. Well, before we go on to the scourging, there are a couple of important things that John decided to skip over that happened. One is found in Matthew 27, verse 19. While he was sitting on the judgment seat, speaking of Pilate, his wife sent to him saying, have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him. Well, his wife's name was Claudia Procula, and later tradition says that she actually became a Christian. And some people wonder if, well, maybe she's the Claudia that was mentioned in 2 Timothy 4:21. Although I'd like to think so, that may or may not be true. But, you know, the women in the audience, they are probably going to point out that the lesson here is for men to listen to their wives. And the other one is found in Luke 23. See, Pilate discovered that Jesus was a Galilean, and he thought, oh, there's my chance. And so he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem. You see, Galilee was Herod's jurisdiction. And this is one of Pilate's attempts to get out of it. Well, in verses 8 through 11, we read, "Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate." See, it sounds like Herod wanted a show, but the miracles, they're certainly not for entertainment purposes. And on top of that, Jesus had previously referred to Herod as a fox in Luke 13. So why would he waste his breath? So I think this silence was something of a rebuke. And I do believe that there are times when we're to hold our peace, when that would be the best thing. There is a time to be silent and a time to speak. Ecclesiastes 3:7. All right, with that in mind, let's dig into our text. Now, remember, if you ever miss a sermon in a series like this and you're interested, you can always just find it on our YouTube channel or on our website. So let's go to John 19 now, and let's read the first six verses about the scourging and presentation of Jesus. And I've asked Ken if he'd go ahead and read again for us today.
"Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, 'Hail, King of the Jews!' And they struck him in the face. Once more Pilate came out and said to the Jews, 'Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him.' When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, 'Here is the man.' And as soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, 'Crucify! Crucify!' But Pilate answered, 'You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him.'"
All right, I want to talk a bit about this scourging. Now, Pilate didn't actually do the scourging himself, but ordered it done, as Matthew and Mark tell us. In some versions, like the NIV, they take the liberty of translating it that way. But it's just another example of the New Testament writers giving credit to someone who either did something directly or through an agency. Now, Apologetics Press, they've got an article that you can read online called "An Examination of the Medical Evidence for the Physical Death of Christ." It's a good article, but it's not for the faint of heart. And in the article, the scourging is described, and it seems that Mel Gibson, in his Passion of the Christ, got it right, at least for the most part. Now, I'm just curious, how many of you have seen that movie, by the way? Okay. In an interview with Jim Caviezel, and he's the one who played Jesus in that movie, he said that, well, he had a protective shield on, of course, during the scourging scene, but that, quote, "one of them missed and it hit me flush right on the back. It ripped the skin right off my back, but I couldn't scream because the pain knocked the wind out of me. It was so horrendous that my voice got away from me quicker than I could scream." And he also said that they modeled some of the marks off of that real mark that he had received. Now, the law of Moses, it required that a person be given no more than 40 lashes. But the Romans, they weren't under the law of Moses. They could and probably would give many more. And the whip the Romans often used, it had multiple straps with bone and metal tied into them, or other hard or sharp objects. It was much worse than the British cat o' nine tails. Well, if this scourging was severe, it might explain why Jesus was not able to carry his cross for long and why he didn't live long after he was crucified. Well, in verses 2 and 3, we see that they put him in a mock attire of a king, and they began to ridicule him and to hit him. It says that they wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head. Now, there is a shrub or small tree that's common over there, and it's believed to be the one that was used in the crown of thorns, and so it's now called Christ's thorn. If that's the case, well, from what I've read, the average length of thorn on this plant is 1 inch. And we don't know if it was made into a circlet like this or if it was more like a helmet, but it would have been extremely painful. I'm sure some of you have been tangled up with a thorn bush or maybe a locust tree, and it's pretty rough. And some people like to point out that thorns are a symbol of the curse of sin, Genesis 3:18. Well, this robe that they used, it may have been an old cloak from one of the Roman officers, or it could have been the beautiful robe that Herod sent him back in, and they just decided to put it back on him, and we're not told. And purple, of course, that was a color often symbolizing and used by royalty. And Matthew tells us that they also put a reed in his right hand, and that they were taking it and hitting him on the head with it. And so it really seems here that Pilate sought a compromise. See, he was hoping that this would satisfy them. As he said in Luke 23, verses 16 and 22, "I will therefore punish him and release him." Again, Pilate, he told him he found no guilt in Jesus. And I read that scourging was sometimes used to try to get a confession out of someone, to get them to confess their guilt. And maybe Pilate was saying that under the scourge, he didn't confess any guilt. And so that's another reason why Pilate didn't think that he was guilty. Or maybe he's just showing them his compromise here. He didn't believe that Jesus was guilty, but he still punished Jesus for them. Well, we're not told, but some scholars think Pilate actually staged this mockery as well as the scourging to try to produce more pity for Jesus from the crowd. And see, he probably thought for sure that the sight of Jesus like this, severely punished and all this ridicule, well, that'd satisfy the mob. And it's pretty clear that he didn't want to crucify Jesus. But again, he miscalculated them. Crucify, crucify. It's been said, a wild beast cannot be placated by showing it blood. To do so only enrages it more. The religious leaders, they had plotted for some time for Jesus' death. And so nothing but his death is going to satisfy them. Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." Now, of course, they weren't allowed to, but it seems that Pilate is just getting exasperated. You know, his patience is giving out. And it could be that Pilate was taunting them. "You crucify him." "Oh, wait, you're not allowed to." Well, since this accusation of Jesus claiming to be a king, it wasn't working, well, they brought out a new accusation, starting in verse 7.
"The Jews insisted, 'We have a law, and according to that law, he must die, because he claimed to be the Son of God.' When Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. And when he went back inside the palace, 'Where do you come from?' he asked Jesus, but Jesus gave him no answer. 'Do you refuse to speak to me?' Pilate said. 'Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?' Jesus answered, 'You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin.'"
All their efforts to get Jesus crucified for sedition had obviously failed, and so they brought out another charge. If he couldn't be convicted by Roman law, well, he certainly can be by Jewish law. So up until this time, they had kept this hidden from Pilate. The real reason, the real crime on which they sentenced him, his claim to be the Son of God. And this is actually a true accusation. He did say that. And Leviticus 24:16, it would probably call for his death. But there are a couple of problems. All right, first of all, the Leviticus passage, it calls for death specifically by stoning. And second, it's not blasphemy if it's true. And he had presented the evidence to back it up. It's very interesting that they condemned God's son because he claimed to be God's son. Verse 8 says, "When Pilate therefore heard this statement, he was the more afraid." He had seen the unusual personality of Jesus. He had his wife's warning and now this. And maybe he was a superstitious kind of guy. And so this charge frightened him. You remember the Romans, they're pagan polytheists. And so they got all kinds of stories of gods coming down in human form and appearing as men. Or here's another possibility. Maybe he was just afraid that it seemed that the situation could spiral out of control if he didn't do what they said. Because of his past dealings with the Jews and with their religion, maybe he was afraid of becoming involved in another local religious dispute. So he entered into the praetorium again and asked Jesus, "Where are you from?" Now, he knew Jesus was from Galilee, and that's why he sent him to Herod. And so it seems that he's trying to find out if Jesus actually claimed to have a heavenly origin. Okay, stepping back, Pilate actually asked some very important questions of Jesus, like, "Are you the king of the Jews? What have you done? What is truth? And where are you from?" When it comes to Jesus, these are questions that we all have to find the answer to. But Jesus didn't answer him here. And the question is often asked, why? I mean, why do you keep silent? Well, we're not told. F.F. Bruce gave this possibility. What answer that he could have given would have meant anything to a pagan judge or conveyed any sense of what he had in mind when he spoke to others of having come forth from the Father? And it could be that Jesus just didn't answer any of Pilate's questions that he wouldn't have understood or that he wouldn't have believed. Or maybe the motive of the question wasn't right. It sounds, though, that he considered Jesus' silence to be an insult. You know, hey, you know, I'm the one who's in charge here. I mean, it's very foolish to make me grumpy. It's very foolish to annoy me since I'm the one who can either help you or hurt you in this situation. And some people think in order to conceal his fear, well, he began to boast, which is common. Jesus then replied, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above." As usual, Jesus is perfectly composed. I mean, he's never intimidated. Romans 13:1 teaches, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God." God is the one who had allowed Pilate to be in that position, and God is the one who allowed Jesus to be placed into his hands. Jesus would not go to the cross because of Pilate and his great power. I mean, he'd go to the cross because of his own volition. Despite what he may think, Pilate was not the main actor in this drama. Well, Jesus, he added, "For this reason, he who delivered me up to you has the greater sin." And I've often wondered, is this referring to Judas or to Caiaphas? They both knew better, an apostle and the high priest. And they were both responsible for Jesus being there. But because he's talking to Pilate, I think he's referring to Caiaphas, the one who actually delivered Jesus to him. Pilate is really just doing his job and is somewhat being pressured into this. Caiaphas, on the other hand, no, that guy, his relentless will to crucify Jesus was worse. Now, both of them, you'd have to say, sinned in abusing their office, but Caiaphas, being the high priest, had the greater sin. Pilate, he's a Roman governor, but Caiaphas, he is the high priest of God. As Butler said, Pilate's position, and as a consequence, his ability to know about Jesus, is not as privileged as the position of the Jewish rulers. The Jewish rulers have been entrusted with the oracles of God and have been given the privileged position to really know the Messiah. Therefore, they have the greater sin. Now, it's often asked, are there really degrees of sins? And will there be degrees of punishment? And this is a really good question for the box when we get back to our Q&A class. But let me just give you an abbreviated answer, which seems to be yes. And this principle is seen in the Old Testament. For example, if you were caught stealing a man's sheep, you had to pay 4 sheep in return. If you were caught stealing a man's wife, you had to pay with your life. It makes sense. There's obviously a difference in a youth stealing a candy bar and a youth murdering his parents. And the amount of knowledge that someone has, well, that seems to make a difference. In Jesus' parable in Luke 12, he said, "And that slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accordance with his will shall receive many lashes, but the one who did not know it and committed deeds worthy of a flogging will receive but few. And from everyone who has been given much shall much be required, and to whom they entrusted much, of him they will ask all the more." Now, just keep in mind that any sin will separate you. Any sin can separate you from God. And that's why we need the blood of Jesus. Well, Pilate, he thought he was judging Jesus, but he was actually the one being judged. Well, according to John, these are the last words that Pilate heard from the lips of Jesus. All right, let's continue with verses 12 through 16 with Pilate finally giving in.
From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as a stone pavement. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the 6th hour. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priests answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus.
Something about this last encounter with Jesus seems to have really struck him. And it says, as a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him. He had made an effort before, but this seems to have been a stronger effort. He had declared Jesus innocent 3 times. He had given them an option between Barabbas and Jesus. He tried to satisfy them by having Jesus scourged. I mean, he should have known that nothing was going to work. Now, keep in mind that most of them, they hated being subjects of Rome. But all of a sudden, they got patriotic here. They were worried about Caesar. Maybe he was in the process of giving the release order, and so you'd have to say that they resorted to political blackmail. I mean, it really sounds as if they're threatening Pilate. If word got back to Rome that there was someone claiming to be a king, and Pilate didn't do anything about it, well, he could be in big trouble. And you might have been thinking, if they would lie about Jesus, well, they'd lie about me, and it might work. From what I've read, the emperor at that time, Tiberius, that was a very jealous and suspicious man when it came to his authority and his power. And Pilate, he had already been complained about. And so, he could have been afraid of his record. So again, they threw everything that they could think of at Pilate. First, trying to get him to simply take their word for it and condemn Jesus. Then, a political charge against Jesus. Then a religious charge against Jesus, and now a threat against Pilate himself. Well, Pilate, he couldn't allow more rumors of his incompetency to reach the ears of Caesar. And so he decided to sacrifice an innocent man instead of sacrificing himself. His anxiety over his position had won out over his desire for justice, whatever it may have been. But sadly, that, of course, is the case for many people, isn't it? Integrity takes a back seat when it comes to their position in the world. And so he sat back on the judgment seat that was signifying that he was ready to make a final judicial act in this case. Jesus stood there before Pilate to be judged. And someday, interestingly enough, Pilate will stand before Jesus to be judged. Well, verse 14 says that it was the day of preparation for the Passover. Now, remember that the entire week was often designated Passover. And so this could be the preparation day of that week. In other words, the Friday of the Passover week. Now, take a look at verse 31. It says, "The Jews, therefore, because it was the day of preparation, so that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath," which is Saturday. You know, we learn the same from Luke 23 and verse 54. But people, they certainly argue about it. They argue about what day of the week it was, exactly how long Jesus was in the tomb. Now, one thing you can do is look at the way that the Jews considered a day. But I personally have never thought it was very important, either way, whichever position you take. I mean, we can still be friends, even if you disagree with me on this. Now, there are a number of questions here as to the time of day, because it seems to contradict the time given in Mark's gospel. And this is another of the places where the skeptics will try to jump on it. Mark 15:25, it says that Jesus was crucified on the third hour. That's about 9 a.m. Jewish time. But John says the sentencing happened about the sixth hour. Now, the easiest explanation is that Jesus' sentencing here refers to Roman time, which would be about 6 a.m., as my footnote says. Now, if that's so, that means that all of this really did take place early in the morning, John 18:28. Well, that causes some people to wonder if all of that could have really taken place so early, before 6 a.m. It just depends on when they actually came to Pilate. And John did say about the sixth hour. I mean, it's not like he looked down at his Rolex and noted the exact time. It could have been later than 6 a.m., a bit later. Well, verses 15 and 16. "They therefore cried out, 'Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!' Pilate said to them, 'Shall I crucify your king?' The chief priests answered, 'We have no king but Caesar.'" And so Pilate tried one more time, or I don't know, maybe this is just a final attempt to shame them and get in one last taunt, you know, one last opportunity to jab at them and to show them how ridiculous this was. "Shall I crucify your king?" Again, the proud Jewish people, they deeply resented being subjects of Rome, but the chief priests, they've been driven to the limit, and they're willing to say anything at this point. "We have no king but Caesar." And as Barclay put it, it is a terrible picture. The hatred of the Jews turned them into a maddening mob of shrieking, frenzied fanatics. In their hatred, they forgot all mercy, all sense of proportion, all justice, all their principles, even God. Never in history was the insanity of hatred so vividly shown. So they had chosen Barabbas over Jesus, and now Caesar over Jesus. In about 40 years, their beloved Caesar would have enough of them, and he would destroy Jerusalem. Now, somewhere in here, Matthew 27, verses 24 through 25 fits in. "And when Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather that a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the multitude, saying, 'I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves.' And all the people answered and said, 'His blood be on us and on our children.'" You know, the washing of the hands, of course, this is just a theatrical act, you know, kind of like presenting Jesus as a mock king. He knew it was wrong, but he's going to let them have their way. Pilate's soldiers, they'd go ahead and crucify Jesus for the Jews. As Lenski said, "Pilate washed his hands in water, but he could not remove the stain of guilt. His name is covered with infamy to this day." I mean, you notice that not many parents name their children after Pontius Pilate. Pilate, he recognized Jesus' innocence, and he had the authority to uphold justice. But he gave in to the demands of the crowd. Now again, this is a temptation for anyone who holds a position of power or a position of authority. He decided to sacrifice an innocent man rather than possibly to sacrifice his career. And like so many people today, Pilate, he knew what was right. But he seemed to want to do what was right. But in the end, he wouldn't stand for it. The pressure was too great. Will you and I stand up for what is right no matter what? Will we stand up for what is right, or like Pilate, give in to what is expedient or what is politically correct? Now, something else. Have you ever compromised what you knew was right for the sake of peace? So as I'm sure you've discovered, the more people you try to appease, the more you have to compromise. So what happened to Pilate after this? Well, as I mentioned last week, from what I've read, in AD 36, the governor of Syria brought some pretty serious accusations against Pilate regarding his treatment of the Samaritans. But while he was traveling to Rome to defend himself, the emperor died. And tradition says that he was banished to Gaul, and Eusebius reports that he ended up committing suicide. Not a happy ending. The happy ending is found with Jesus. As Doyle Gillam, one of my old teachers, put it, from the human standpoint, the trial of Jesus was the greatest crime and tragedy in history. From the divine viewpoint, it was the fulfillment of prophecy and the accomplishment of the will of God. And so, in the words of Pilate, behold the man. Now, what will you and I do with him?